This week, WWE Super Showdown, we look at progress at Wembley Arena and New Japan's Fighting Spirit Unleashed.
Welcome to Staring at the Lights with Rob, Tom and Ethan. Hello. This week has been quite a bumper week, I think, for pay-per-views and big events.
Got a lot going on.
A lot going on this week. Firstly, we'll talk about the most recent one, which was WWE Super Showdown at the Melbourne Cricket Grounds.
Yesterday morning for us. Yesterday morning.
70,000 there.
Big crowd.
Bigger crowd than what they got for the Greatest Royal Rumble.
Yep.
And I think that, for me, that transferred across to the show because the show felt more like a pay-per-view than an exhibition, like what
I thought.
Do you think
it might have been down to the fact that they didn't have couches in the front row? Maybe there's a few more people in there. Chaise Long in the front row.
It was a real crowd. It wasn't like an exhibition show, like what?
What an arena, though.
Jesus Christ. Yeah, great place, great venue for
I don't follow cricket, so I didn't know it were that even that big of a deal, but Jesus.
Big. There's a stat that they actually said on the show, I think it was like Renee Young said it or something, but if you walk the entire circumference around the top ring, it's a mile long.
Mental.
Ridiculous.
But overall, I thought it was a really good pay-per-view. Yeah. Some aspects of it weren't great, which we probably won't touch on because they just weren't really great matches, but the matches that stood out for me, number one was the first sort of match we got to would have been the Charlotte and Becky match.
Yeah. Really good match.
I really enjoyed their matches.
Yeah.
And their matches, to me, are like proper wrestling matches. There's a lot of working body parts. There's a lot of, you know, like...
Good ring psychology.
There's no big, crazy, daft spots. Just good, solid matches.
Even just from the entrances, like, Becky's entrance, like, really stood out to me with how she's evolved with that character. Like, you look at her, and even the way, like, the glam squad are doing her makeup, she's got this kind of, like... She's just got this kind of like more rugged look about her. She's got that bit of kind of like Austin in that turn where she's walking to the ring with the title in the air, and you can see she's got more confidence than she had before. And she just wrestled a hell of a match. And like the two of them were kind of doing that. It's weird because the crowd was so behind her. Like the crowd were just like full on, like rabid for Becky.
Yeah.
And it was weird. It was had that kind of like Bret Austin potential kind of double turn kind of vibe to it.
Mm-hmm. Which you know, it was a hangover from their last match that they had where she won.
Absolutely.
It was interesting to see there was a sort of like a 30-second spell where they were just sort of exchanging punches with each other, and every time Becky landed one, the crowd cheered, and every time Charlotte did, they all booed.
It's awesome to see, because you haven't seen it with the men for a long time.
No.
Like,
no,
I mean, maybe like Cena Punk type thing. Like, it's been a long time since you saw that real, like, cheer-boo dynamic.
Yeah.
Like, and it's really good to see, especially from those two, because they haven't, you could compare them to like Sasha and Bayley, where like they were the original two of the four horsewomen to come up, and rather than kind of like fizzle out like what has seemingly happened to Sasha and Bayley, they're still carrying that and they're still performing to a really high standard.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a really good match. I really enjoyed it.
It's nice to just see like the kind of classic heel tactics, like winning with the belt shot.
Yeah,
just makes sense because they carry on the feud, and I wouldn't mind seeing a couple more matches out of
it. I think it carries the series on well.
Yeah.
I don't mind that she won or she's lost by disqualification, because I think that's what she should have done to keep Charlotte looking strong and to keep the title on Becky. I just think whipping her with the belt, I think she could have done better. I think she could have clocked her in the head a bit or something rather than doing that.
But it's an awkward spot to hit, really. Like, you can see what they were thinking.
Shot,
but it's kind of like Charlotte's doubled back on herself, like bent over in the figure eight, kind of crabbed backwards. And Becky's kind of in that position, like, well, where do I hit? Do I hit her knees? Do I hit her midsection? Yeah. But I guess it's just a case of, like, no matter what level of use the foreign object is, the referee's still got
to
call it off.
Either way.
And I mean, I'm of that kind of thing where I know a lot of wrestling fans will go, oh, it was a draw, oh, it was this. And it's like, but that's what relates it to real sport. Like, I love a dusty finish or a time limit draw, because it's the only thing that kind of grounds it in reality. Like, if you don't have time limits, how do you know the show runs perfectly every time?
Of course.
Mm-hmm. It's like, it just makes logical sense to me. So I love a good time limit draw. I love a good disqualification, because it just muckies things up and makes it a bit more real.
Yeah, of course.
And I thought it was wicked.
I think that's something they maybe don't use enough in WWE. Japan use it a lot.
They use it a lot.
And
it's
they even announce it, you know, in the match. They'll say 5 minutes, 10 minutes in.
Yeah.
And I do like that. And I remember years back, I remember watching like an old Jake Roberts match, and it would say this is you know, for one fall with a 15-minute time limit.
Yeah.
And they don't do that anymore.
No. I don't particularly like it. I don't dislike it.
Yeah.
Because the only reason I think you should ever use that is if you have the opportunities to have draws. And there's not a lot of draws in matches like anywhere in the world. Like even and in New Japan, like always count down and stuff. But
yeah,
I mean the only one I can think of, yeah, normally is always a finish to them. And I don't, I don't dislike it. I know like PWG has a time limit in every single match, apart from like Guerrilla Warfare matches and things like that. But
yeah,
I've only ever seen probably I've not watched a huge amount of old PWG, but in the newest stuff like the past 5-6 years, I can't think of maybe 1-2 times since a time limit draw has finished the match.
Yeah,
so again, I don't mind it, but I don't think WWE really needs it because they have the time they need. Like they can.
Yeah. Well, I think it's like Tom said, WWE is more entertainment, whereas New Japan still get it over as this is a sport.
WWE are happy to just go. We're not that bothered about grounded everything in reality. Jeez, I mean, you get Braun flipping ambulances, exactly. So they're kind of like, look, it's tongue in cheek. Like, enjoy it for what it is. Yeah. We're not going to think too much about it. Please don't you think too much about it, and you better not think too much about it because Jesus, that's when you start to lose control a little bit.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But all in all, though, it was a good match.
Sterling. Yeah.
Yeah.
Carries their series. Looking forward to the next one. Evolution.
I could watch their matches. I don't really see any need to take the title off of Becky.
I think Charlotte's winning at Evolution personally, but.
Yeah, I mean, I could see that. I mean, when I was watching that match, I was going to say last night, but I suppose yesterday morning, the thing that kind of stood out was that there was, to me, it didn't make any sense in any way, shape, or form to have Charlotte take that belt because Becky had only just got it and she's on fire at the minute.
Yeah, yeah.
It just would not have made any sense. It had killed another star dead for the sake of keeping Charlotte strong. Yeah. But Charlotte won and Becky still got the title.
Yeah.
And it's just it just works better that way.
I think it was the ending that was right for that match.
Absolutely.
And for that series.
Totally.
The next match that really stood out would probably be the AJ Styles and Samoa Joe match.
War.
I really like this.
It
kind of happened to all the matches, but this is the one that I picked up on, that the entrance ramp was so long that by the time that the first person in had got to 10 feet from the ring, the other person's music had hit.
Yeah.
Which in some matches, it just looked a bit daft.
It did, yeah.
But in this one, it worked well because it was like AJ's interrupting and he's ready to come out. And the way that they just
ran at each other.
I was watching it and thinking, just run at each other, run at each other, run at each other. That'd be such a good start.
Yeah,
run at each other, and they did. I really like this match.
It
was good. It was a good, hard-hitting match.
I think I said in my last podcast how I was really underwhelmed with their feud so far and how I was kind of like, they've lost a lot of steam for me in the fact they didn't reference the history and it's all about this whole AJ's wife and kids thing. But the package they played kind of leading up to it and, it showed the better parts of what they've been doing with it.
Yeah.
And it really built Joe to be like sinister and it built AJ to be this kind of like proud dad who wanted to defend his family. And it's like this match encapsulated everything a lot better. It was just intense, hard hitting. Joe seemed like a real monster. Like AJ was hitting him with some good stuff, but Joe just kept snuffing
him
out.
There was a chop that got hit by Samoa Joe that was up
Walter-esque.
There with anything that Walter would have hit. And
so
you could
good.
Hear that rattle around, you know,
amazing.
A 70,000 capacity arena.
Because Styles hit him with that, like, he kicked him first, and that was a loud kick, like, right on the chest. And then Joe just slaps him back, and honestly, he's just slapped the soul out of the guy. It was awesome. Really,
now
really cool.
A good job.
Honestly, it just lit the arena up. It was wicked.
Mm. It really brought the crowd
back in.
Up another notch, almost.
Joe hit a tope that was pretty mean. It was awesome just to see him because it was like on the way towards the ramp and he just came flying at him, just like a Harrier jet.
The way he moves, Samoa Joe.
Insane.
That sort of corner uranage onto the chair that was open legitimately looked like it hurt.
Yeah.
There was the table spot that, you know, looks like it had not worked, but then obviously Joe selling his knee,
I remember laughing at a point of that when Joe took the table out. And Michael Cole just goes, he says something like, Samoa Joe is hungry and now he's about to lay the table. And I was like, God, that is horrible, horrible commentary. Who's told you to say that? We all know who's told you to say that.
We all know that's been said.
I don't know where they're going to go from now. I mean, I don't know, like, what the next, because Joe's already lost like three on the bounce.
Yeah. That's like the third.
It's like Nakamura territory. They did it.
It's weird because like WWE do so much 50-50 booking, but this feud just seems to be going only one way.
They did it with Nakamura.
Yeah. And they did that same thing with Nakamura, but it's like what do you want from it? Like what is the end goal? Is it
who
to put Styles
AJ's
over?
Like, Styles strong for?
Yeah, is to put who? Styles over.
It seems like
I mean they've got the Daniel Bryan match coming up. Soon,
yeah, they have. Which then
maybe they're keeping him strong for that.
That kind of looks like if they're now having this, you know, this match at Crown Jewel,
yeah,
then that's the end of the Joe Styles series.
Yeah,
I think personally it will be a run-in by Joe during that match.
Yeah, I think they'll still keep the title on AJ Styles.
But I think it'll finish by DQ with Joe running in and beating the shit out of AJ. Maybe also beating the shit out of Daniel Bryan.
To be fair,
set up a three-way, which I wouldn't be against.
That would be like their X Division match. Was it Christopher Daniels in that?
It was Daniel Styles and Joe.
God, what a match!
Daniel Styles and Joe.
I'm not a fan of triple threats, but mate, I'd be
done right. They can be brilliant.
Yeah.
And what ruins the triple threat match is when there's a submission hold and someone grabs the rope and the ref breaks it and you're screaming at your TV like it's a no DQ.
Yeah, yeah.
Triple threat matches don't have
stop
rules.
Stop doing that. Yeah. Don't listen to him. Just snap his neck. Yeah.
I think what they're trying to do with AJ, and I can see this happening, is they just seem to be on this mission to every champion they have outlast what CM Punk did.
Yeah, I feel like that's always brought up, isn't it?
I think that's what they're going to do with this. Yeah. And it wouldn't surprise me.
Push him off a top five spot.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me if AJ Styles is still champion even at WrestleMania next year.
Yeah.
No, I don't think he'll go that long.
I just can't.
I think he'll lose it probably maybe a couple more months he might get out of it.
Maybe at the Rumble, maybe.
I don't know. I feel like something's coming.
That's the next big thing that's coming.
I feel like something's coming.
Isn't there, but.
And again, I think I'm probably being silly and stupid to think that WWE think this far ahead, but I can't see him holding it for much longer.
Not reckon.
I think he's got much left to do. Like, he hasn't got much left to prove.
But on the other hand, there's only two or three, Joe and Brian included, that are really right to take it from him. I can't see anyone else on that SmackDown roster.
Nakamura's tied up with the US title. Yeah. Randy Orton, we don't need another Randy Orton reign.
Unless they just build something new, which again wouldn't happen because it's WWE, but
all I'm saying is bring Batista back at SmackDown, just have him beaten for the title. Give him a little run. I'd be happy. Absolutely adore that man.
Dave Batista.
The next one on the card that was really stood out would have been the Buddy Murphy Cedric Alexander match,
best
which
match
was probably arguably the best match on
the whole card.
Probably on the whole card, really.
Yeah, I'd say so. I mean,
it's interesting because I think that like they have great chemistry.
Yeah.
But again, where does it next go?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, Buddy, like Buddy's been impressive since he landed in 205 because he doesn't look like a 205 wrestler.
I don't think he is. I don't think he is.
It's all gimmicked, isn't it? But he's
but he moves like he's into it. He moves like a cruiserweight.
He was great.
Some of the stuff they pulled in that match, that top rope,
insane.
That Michinoku driver from the top was.
My God.
I don't think I've ever seen anything like that in WWE, especially.
He used to do it quite
like stuff like that quite a lot. Second Alexander is amazing. But I feel it was like it was just a pop for the Australian crowd, and it's gonna like change.
Yeah.
They're gonna just switch the title back when they get back to
America. That was the thing, and.
You've got to think what Murphy's drawing factor's like outside of Australia.
I mean, he kicked out of the lumbar check, didn't he? Which is one of the most protected finishes
I can
think of.
Alexander's not been
beaten
in a calendar year. All of 2018, he's not been beaten.
Nobody's kicked out of the lumbar check, so
no one.
It's interesting to see that happen. I'd have thought that if they were going to switch it back straight away, they maybe have kept that finish strong, but mate, I don't know if they keep it on him or not. I can't quite tell. I'd like him to hold it for a while. I think he's really good.
I love him. I mean, I thought he was great in the back in NXT with Bam Factor, Blake and Murphy, when it was him and Alexa, like they were great tag champions. But then as soon as Alexa left the scene, it's like those guys had nothing to do. And like it's good to see, because he's obviously grafted so hard to transform himself for what he is now.
Absolutely.
And it's good to see it paying off for him. I mean, I don't think he's. It's weird because I think the cruiserweight division really needs someone who can carry the brand from a promo perspective.
Yeah.
Like they need another kind of, you don't want to say it, but they need another Enzo. They need someone who can get the brand over to be more popular than it is, rather than just being about...
Just bring attention to it more.
Yeah.
And it's not a a division that's just there to warm a crowd up before a regular Tuesday night SmackDown or
something
like that.
These little guys are rad. I mean, you look at like Conor Khabib, that just happened like last night, like smaller guys carrying a company. Mm. Like you don't have to be big just to be the ones that can carry a company. So
I reckon when they go to Fox, they'll have it their own scheduled show.
Yeah, that's a good shout. I could see that.
Which, again, is what they need. They need it. Because
certainly in the last year, it's come on leaps and bounds
massively,
to what it was.
Massively.
A lot of that is because Triple H has taken over the booking and the production of it from Vince, because Vince just didn't really want anything to do with it anymore.
Yeah.
But you can see that Triple H has got that influence on it and he's pushing it in the right direction.
Yeah.
It could be another show on its own, like we said. It could be a Wednesday night thing where, you know, they've had their own sort of house show and their own little run of shows just as the Cruiserweights and the 205. Yeah. Or five live series.
The way I look at it is like you got to look at it as any other like independent promotion, because it isn't an independent promotion because it's run by WWE. But every independent promotion starts off recording the shows in small arenas, and then by word of mouth, by popularity, they grow and they grow and they grow. It's the same thing with that, but they've got such a bigger stage because everybody that's in that building is already there to watch SmackDown anyway, so they've already got 5,000, 6,000 people to sit and watch a 205 show. Then 5,000 people go out and be like, oh, this 205 show that I saw before SmackDown was awesome.
And that's the thing, that it's now before SmackDown and not after it.
Yeah, because you don't want to stick around.
That's the thing that's made it and pushed it, and more people are willing to give it a chance than what we're doing. If, you know, they'd have a match and then they'd have a dark match with some of the SmackDown roster guys that come out and do something, and then it'd be 205 Live. It's a lot better.
It's it was just so good to see a main event pop for somebody who's used to warming up a crowd.
Yeah.
Like, it was awesome, because it's like the crowd blew up as if like they'd watch a almost like a WrestleMania main event win. It was like they blew up because it's like their hometown boy winning the title. And how often do you see a crowd doing that on WWE TV when it's not the main event? You rarely ever see it. And it just felt great for him. Like, it felt wicked. Regardless of where it goes, it could be a Zack Ryder thing. It could be a big pop, lots of photos, most amazing night of my life. Or it could be on to better things, I hope so.
Yeah, they keep it on him. I wrote a bit of a review about this on RGM.press.
Oh, you can check out
for Rate Good magazine online.
Do you know what, Rob?
And I put at the end,
Rate Good.
Rate Good.
And I put at the end of it, I hope they don't just put this back on Cedric Alexander on Tuesday.
Oh, God.
RGM. I hope they don't press do that.
I was going to say, could you imagine? But yeah. Pretty much
One of the next matches was The Shield. And Braun Strowman. Sorry, The Shield versus Braun Strowman, Dolph Ziggler and Drew McIntyre.
Ziggler.
This was quite a good match, but it wasn't up to the standard of the tag match that they had at Hell in a Cell.
No.
Without Braun and Roman.
It was very chaotic.
It was very chaotic. And the only thing that made it slightly interesting was a week or so of building up of maybe Dean Ambrose is going to turn on The Shield and do this heel turn. And they teased that once or twice.
Well, Dean was the highlight of that match to me, and I mean the fact that he was the one who got the pinfall. I mean, I know it's only over Ziggler, but it's a big deal, because like for so long it's been the Braun Roman Seth show, and it's nice to see like Dean getting a bit of shine. And like, he came back, and then it seemed like the week he came back they would decide we're going to do all the Shield stuff, and it kind of overwhelmed and rode over his return, which should have been a big deal. But it's just kind of like, oh yeah, I'm back in Roman's army, when really Dean's a lot more than that. Like, arguably, when The Shield were first around, he's the guy who got them over, that gave the other two a platform to jump over, because he was the only one doing anything for the longest time when they started. And it's nice to see Dean getting a bit of shine, then putting the story around Dean. That was, to me, the end of the match was probably the best part of it. The rest of it was just your usual. Felt a bit like, it's weird, as soon as The Shield show up, I just feel like I'm watching Monday Night Raw again, and it loses that big special feel, which it just,
I did like the finish. I did like how Roman saves him from this, because there was that hint of like, when all four of them with Strowman, Ziggler and McIntyre were on the edge with Ambrose on the other side, there was a point where I thought, oh, maybe they are going to do a bit of a heel turn, which would seem crazy that The Shield's been back for 2 or 3 weeks and they're ready to just destroy it already.
Animosity about against each other already.
How long did it last the first time around? Like, they flipped the implode like really quick, didn't they? Like,
they fairly did, yeah.
When Dean was back the last time, when they like finally reformed, and then they had the triple threat.
Someone got injured, didn't they?
But that was Dean getting injured, though.
That was Dean getting injured.
That was his elbow injury, and it kept him out for almost a year.
Yeah, right. But then they still like imploded, didn't they? But I guess that's why they
were teasing the implode. Definitely, they were going.
I don't really care for Dean Ambrose.
I like him. I'm a fan. I can see why you wouldn't. Like,
I don't know what it is. I don't know why. Yeah, I just don't care for him.
I went really off him when he was on SmackDown and they were calling him, the Duke or the Don or something like that. Yeah. And he kept hitting that
little series with AJ Styles and then getting James Ellsworth in and stuff like that.
I'm going to sound like...
That's where he kind of lost and almost looked into that mid-card. Then he had that really weird match with Brock, that kind of no DQ match.
I'm going to sound like an absolute mark, but I love John Moxley and I don't like Dean Ambrose. Right. And it's the markiest thing I've ever said.
Smarkiest thing.
So smarkiest. Smarky. But I think there's so much good in him. His promo work, like, it's still there and he can still do it. It's just... Is he given the chance
to
shine?
Maybe I don't like him. Not dislike him, but there's a potential that he could have. Because you can't market a lunatic fringe.
When he can't do anything.
Those two words. He hates it by all accounts. When you can't do out about it.
Mm. Yeah, he can't. He's not actually using any real weapons. He's not hitting people in the Edward chairs. He'd have probably been... I mean, he was fantastic in like his indie days with like CZW and stuff like that and the crazy stuff he did. Like, you know, he was a genuine hardcore wrestler. Like, you know, light tubes and barbed wire. But then he's just doing those stupid floppy lariats and awful. Yeah.
It wasn't the worst match I've seen out of those, that kind of group of guys. One thing that is a little frustrating is you've got the Raw Tag Champions, you've got the Intercontinental Champion, you've got the Universal Champion, and none of that
all
is on
the line. All the belts are tied up. Every single belt on Raw tied up in these guys.
With six people, and none of them are for that person.
Yeah.
It'll probably take us longer to talk about this next match than the actual match itself, but Daniel Bryan and The Miz...
Yeah, I'll be honest, I didn't pay too much attention to it. I feel like I've seen this match over and over and over again.
It felt like it got cut short for time.
Yeah.
It felt like the whole show was overrunning and they just got told, you know, it's going to be 3 minutes.
Maybe speaking of shows overrunning...
hey, come to that later.
No, but...
We've kind of wanted to see this sort of, you know, we've only just really in the last 6 months had this return of Daniel Bryan and this whole build-up of... him and The Miz, who have got this history of not liking each other.
Yeah.
Then they kind of had a little something, but they had this mixed tag match where they had the wives involved, and this could have been that match that was back, and it was these two finally again.
Yeah.
And for something of substance as well, that being mattered. Number one contender for this for the title.
Mm.
For Daniel Bryan to get this sort of quick roll-up pin after taking a few kicks, it was a little crazy. I thought my feed had skipped or something. I thought something had happened, and
I just really wasn't paying attention from the minute like the entrances kind of kicked off. I watched Daniel's entrance because I like to see what the crowd are doing because the crowd love it.
Yeah.
But then I was just like, I just wasn't paying attention. I was playing on my phone. I was just kind of like, well, I mean, I could have seen it going either way. It wasn't because I couldn't predict the finish. It's just I've lost interest in their feud. And it's not for me saying that they're both bad. I just feel like they've been teasing it and teasing it and teasing it, and they did all the talking smack stuff, and it's never really built to anything. They never built it to a proper blood match. They never built it to a proper payoff match. It just feels like they've had a series of crappy tag matches with their crappy, annoying wives. And it's just like, why are you tying this up? It was such a good chemistry they had when they couldn't touch each other for that long.
Mm.
And then they finally get to that point, wasted. Blew it.
Yeah, I just don't think Daniel Bryan can wrestle like he used to anymore. Not that he wants. I think he wants to, but he's just not allowed, and it sucks.
Maybe he just decides not to for himself.
Well, he's kind of tied up in it. He has his own sort of concussion protocol that he has to go through after every match he has. Yeah. He has to have a special concussion protocol because the WWE was so reluctant to clear him for all that time, even though every other doctor in the land had said, "You're good. You're good to go.
Doing them like stupid fucking flying headbutts.
Did you see him catch Shelton Benjamin on SmackDown? He came off the top rope, smashed him in the head. Smashed heads because Shelton didn't move out at the right time. And it's like, why is that move still in your arsenal?
It shouldn't be.
Why?
I mean, that arguably killed a man and a wife and children.
Yeah, that's a big part of Chris Benoit's concussion problem, just doing them headbutts night after night. And you might think, like, for people who don't know wrestling, you're like, oh yeah, you jump off the rope and pretend to hit him with your head. Your arms are out.
There's no way of stopping you.
Harley Race famously said he hated that move, and he blames himself for a lot of damage caused to other wrestlers because of it.
There's two moves that seem so innocuous to people watching it, and probably to us because we like watching wrestling. We don't know the first thing about what it's been like in a ring and how to take moves or whatever.
Yeah.
We probably like to think we do because the amount we watch.
I could probably try.
I was EWF Backyard Wrestling Champion back in the day, but I'm a bit more respect.
On that Harley Race point of like that sort of, you know, falling headbutt is so horrible to take and to deliver.
It's disgusting.
I heard something a while back, I think it was like Becky Lynch on Stone Cold's podcast, where he was telling her, stop doing a top rope drop kick because you will ruin your hips.
Yeah.
Stop doing that move.
It's like Ember Moon's eclipse. Like that must... It's gonna break a hip.
Hogan
at some point
said it. He was like, I decided on a leg drop because it was an easy move from a finishing move. But you do that night after night, and then you've got two plastic hips and you can't walk right.
Like it's when she hits the floor so hard every night.
Yeah. I hate it.
Can't be good for you.
She's gonna be weak.
Even the amount of times that Stone Cold Steve Austin did a stunner on someone, it looked like that must jar your back. That must hurt the bottom of your back after time.
He gets help from the person that's taking, doesn't he? But still, like the eclipse is like from a top rope. Like it's literally if you got on the top rope and then just jumped and sat on your ass, like just hit the floor.
Yeah,
you're gonna hurt. Like, there's no way it can't hurt.
That can happen to you there. There's like hip issues. There's compression.
If you like misalign or slip a disc, tailbone. Also, you don't know.
Yeah, awful.
I think I might have broken a tailbone before.
Awful.
Last match of the night was the one that the whole kind of show was sold on. Originally set off as Triple H versus The Undertaker. Yeah. And then as we kind of got towards it, we had these promos from, not really from Kane, but from Undertaker saying, you know, well, if Shawn Michaels is going to be in your corner, I'm going to have my brother Kane, which is great because we, you know...
Governor of Knox County
now, he's not going to, you know, be an active wrestler anymore because that's what he needs to do. There was one little bit that I liked about this match where they were, JoJo was introducing them both at the same time, like as they're in the ring rather
like
than coming down the
intro,
like a title fight did. And she said, as of now, this is a no disqualification match. And Taker just looked at her and then looked back at Triple H. I'm like, that's brilliant.
Smirking.
Such good selling.
Michael Cole did say, Taker said he's gone corporate and this is what you have to deal with. And it's like Triple H has decided, you know what, I'm the boss. No DQ, big boy.
I really didn't know what to expect from this match. I thought, I'm hoping it's not going to be like Mania, WrestleMania, where we had a match with Cena and it was just essentially a squash match.
Yeah.
I didn't want it to be a car crash, which was the WrestleMania before that he had with Roman Reigns, which was just not the right way to finish.
Terrible.
But I wasn't expecting it to be nearly an hour long.
And it was good. I quite enjoyed it.
And they don't go at the pace they used to.
No.
But for... four guys who are all approaching or in their 50s. They look great. They worked well.
Especially
they got out.
Sean.
They took, you know, Taker did a lot of work outside of the ring.
Yeah.
I mean, Shawn Michaels was my biggest takeaway from this because in the last podcast, I did say, like, I don't want Shawn to come back. I'm not bothered about Shawn coming back. And I kind of realized that I remember when Shawn Michaels came back in around the mid-2000s. And then I thought, he's too old for this, what's he doing? And then he went on to have probably one of the greatest runs in WWE, not just of the modern era, of all time, one of the greatest runs ever. And I think if anyone can come back at that age from such a long layoff and still do it as good as anybody else, and better even, it's Shawn Michaels.
Yeah.
And watching him just take bumps and move around the ring, making his little snarky jibes, and I just think, there's a reason people call you the greatest in-ring worker of all time. And I'd always say, like, I'm more of a Bret Hart fan, but then I just think... the longevity, and like if anyone can come out now and do it, it's Shawn Michaels, and he was just brilliant. He just framed the match so well, just being around there.
Do you think he wanted to do all that stuff that he did in that match, or do you think it was Vince telling him to do it?
I think Shawn, right. I think probably
because he's always stood by the fact that he got retired by Taker, and that's how it's staying.
Yeah.
And he'll never wrestle again.
Maybe Taker asked him to do it.
And I don't mind him taking. Maybe I don't mind him taking the bumps. And I don't mind him getting involved. But I feel like it's all leading to a match. I really don't want it to lead to a match.
I think it'll be Crown Jewel. You know.
I don't know. I think there'll be some. I think Crown Jewel will be sort of DX versus Brothers of Destruction. So Kane and Taker tag teaming together.
I don't want that. I want Undertaker, Shawn Michaels one more time. I'm ready for it now. Let's do it now.
Let's
do it now.
Rumble on.
DQ, let's go
for
on.
A big Saudi belt.
Probably to the... I think that might go on even to WrestleMania.
I want a big
Saudi belt. Okay. I will settle for a Shawn comeback, but it has to be a one-on-one match. I'll only take a singles match.
I think they'll have this
match
first.
I'm not taking a bullshit DX versus Brothers of Destruction.
That's how it's boring.
I want a Shawn versus anyone in a one-on-one match. And I just, that's all.
Buried alive.
I'll take that. Because I don't know. I feel like he was so adamant that he's never going to wrestle again. And now he just seems to be creeping back into the ring. And it's like, can he still hang? We've only seen him taking the odd bump and the odd, like, he went through a table, which is kind of...
He looks in good shape, but there's bits where you watch him walking around and you're like, he looks like his knees have gone. He's like, almost like he's got rickets almost.
He's one of them, though, because I think he's like, once he gets the blood flowing and once he's warm, once he's going... Because, I mean, you think how late Ric Flair wrestled and was still putting on solid matches. He was older than Shawn is now. Mm. And Ric Flair's not the wrestler Shawn Michaels is.
No, God, no.
I genuinely think, and it's a complete, like, 180 from where I was last week. Oh, well, the last episode we did. And I am ready to see Shawn go one, like, literally the last time ever, one more time, let's just do it. Let's get Saudi money. Let's get it paid up.
Let's not make it one more time if he's going to do it. Because I don't want the last match I ever see of Shawn Michaels to be a DX versus...
I think that will happen, and then there'll be another one afterwards.
Like, put a title on the line.
WrestleMania,
put
main event.
Big in there. Put a young guy in there.
For the WWE title, why not?
Maybe not for a title, but maybe
for a title.
Put a young stud in there with him. Don't put like Cena or somebody that's a Triple H.
AJ?
Like, don't do that.
AJ Styles?
Yeah, can do AJ. I just want somebody that's... I just want old versus new.
Kenny Omega?
Ooh. Imagine... Great ending to the match.
Yeah. Triple H has gone over.
I didn't manage to see this match as it was on. I got a notification through saying that Triple H, you know, he wins by pinfall. I'm like,
he went, what?
But then when you actually watch it, there's a lot of sort of interference. There's a lot of ref bumps. There's a lot of kind of, you know.
Neither of them look weak, but the fact that, like, because Taker's old school, so Taker's kind of like, you're going to have a few more matches than I'm going to have. Let's put you over, but then I'm going to take you around and I'm going to strangle you. I'm going to beat you up. I'm going to smash you through things. And Taker's now, he can't wrestle that style he was wrestling in the mid-2000s where he was just 100 mile an hour, five-star matches, wicked stuff. He's more of the old school, like Harry Brown. I'm going to come out and just throw bombs. That's his gunslinger style is the best for him now. And when he's doing that, it's great. It's great to watch.
It was a good ending to the show. I really liked it.
Super showdown. It
well done.
It was
very
a superest of showdowns.
It was a superb showdown.
This week we also had New Japan's Fighting Spirit Unleashed.
Yes, we did.
I almost came up with a bit of a surprise. I didn't see much about it. And then the next thing, it's like it's tomorrow and it's on New Japan Global on their demand service and stuff. And it was from the Walter Pyramid Arena in Los Angeles, or just outside Los Angeles. Massive card, as there always is with the New Japan show.
Yeah.
Lots and lots of matches.
You have to throw a lot at it, don't they?
The big ones, I suppose, that we want to touch on is the Cody Rhodes and Juice Robinson for the IWGP United States title.
I did not call that finish at all. I just seen it as Juice has been getting a lot of good promo time. He's been doing a lot of really solid work. He's kind of evolved his character, and I thought they're probably going to keep it on him. Cody's got the new belt.
Yeah, like, I thought the same with Switchblade. When I saw him in Altrincham.
Altrincham.
I saw Ricardo and Switchblade in an ice rink in Altrincham.
Excellent.
But I watched him wrestle, and I was like, he's the next big face that when Kenny leaves. Mm. I thought personally, the way that Switchblade wrestles and the way that he looks, I was like, yeah, they're probably going to build him to the highest of heights. But then he lost to Juice, and I was like,
because he doesn't have a beard. Yeah, if he had a beard, he'd be money.
He needs to grow himself a beard.
But yeah.
It was a good match. Good match.
Yeah.
But they always are. Cody Rhodes is, for me, Cody Rhodes is the best thing in wrestling in any promotion now.
You love him.
That is a hot take.
I am really high on
he's
Cody
up there.
Rhodes.
He's
I
definitely
he's
up
great.
There.
But not just for his in-ring work, for everything he does out of the ring as well.
His philanthropy to the wrestling world.
All of that.
All of it.
All of that
he's
he
good.
Does.
I wouldn't go as high as you go, but he's all right.
He's definitely up there. I mean, I just think it's great because it adds that, because the NWA title's historically really important, but it's not the most... I mean, it is now with All In and everything, and it's pretty current, but having that IWGP...
It's not the most coveted of titles that people want.
Yeah, no, it's, I mean, the lineage isn't great, but if you look at the US title, I mean, Kenny Omega, Jay White, Juice, and now Cody, like, that's a hell of a belt to hold.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, it could even lead to an IWGP heavyweight title run, which, I mean, Jesus, could you imagine that? Like, I mean, Cody Rhodes, the guy who was dressing up as Stardust.
What I do like about New Japan, and this goes back to it, like we said earlier, about they make it more of a sport.
Yeah.
Is that when you see that little graphic on screen that says, you know, Cody Rhodes, IWGP US champion, it says fourth IWGP US champion. Same with the heavyweight title, where it'll say, I don't know which number we're on, so I'm just going to make a number up, but it'll say like 81st champion Kenny Omega.
About that. Yeah.
I love that.
Not that many, is it?
I think it might be.
It might not be.
It might be overestimated.
Jamie, look that up.
Hey, Jamie.
Look that up.
But it's quite. I like that because it kind of legitimizes everything. It was similar like they did to All In, which we didn't really touch on because it kind of, you know, it was quite a while back before we started kind of doing the show, that they had weigh-ins.
They had weigh-ins before the matches. Weigh-ins and press conferences. I'm such a sucker for them. I love it.
And that's what New Japan does really well, is these press conferences after their matches.
Yeah.
They talk about the matches after they've done and they interview them and then they don't hold back. This match was really good, a really good finish. Brandy getting involved. The dynamic between Brandy and Cody is unbelievable. I don't know any of, you know, manager with his or performer with his valet or manager that has that interaction like
sex
they do.
Might be a big part of it.
Well, the fact that they are legitimately married does help, but
probably definitely helps. Like Booker and
Charmel. Queen Charmel.
But it was a great match, I probably enjoyed more than any of it was the promo he did afterwards, where he said, "All you talk about is how Juice is Dusty's son. Well, I am Dusty's son, and this is my sport." And that's brilliant.
Amazing.
That's what you want to see.
So good,
because that's what makes it. Well, obviously, we know it's not real, but that's what makes it feel real.
Yeah.
Hot take, guys. It's not real. Just to let you know,
it's real to me. Damn it,
it's still real to me.
One of the matches on the card was the Mighty Skill Will Ospreay match, which
there's some number one contender match.
Yeah, number one contender match for the Junior Heavyweight Championship, which is now against Kushida.
That'll be good.
There was a spot.
I rate Kushida as well.
Was it where
Skill took on that Skill did on Ospreay, where Ospreay landed on the top of his head, and every time. Anytime Ospreay takes any move above the shoulders, I wince because I think that's another vertebrae that's on its way out.
Yeah,
the damage that guy does to himself
was ridiculous. I think Ospreay went for something crazy where he ended up in a weird suplex position and like it was all so quick you could hardly take it in. But Skrull managed to spin it right into a chicken wing, and it was just like the two of them together are just they're just magic. And Skill put out a little tweet afterwards and they're like, what is the win to loss ratio of you two now? And he's like, something daft, like 44 to me and 2 to him, because I'm always just smashing him about, and the only times I've ever lost because of jet lag and sickness. And it's just like nice one, absolute villain. But yeah, no, it's like there's you can't really it's hard to dig deep into that because there's just so much going on between the two of them. It's crazy. They're just like two hornets. It's mental.
Yeah, really good match. Like we say, it set up the next match in the sort of series for that, towards that title shot for Skrull to have the Junior Heavyweight Championship.
Yeah.
The other match that we want to talk about was the Guerrillas of Destiny against the Young Bucks. This was great because this is one of those big faction that's now split in two. Good to see Haku coming out to the ring with his lads. Another great match, Gunston after Gunston, and they kicked out.
Yeah.
The Bucks kicked, you know, hit their finisher. They kicked out. I wasn't expecting Bucks to lose.
I think, like, Guerrillas of Destiny, there's something going to happen there very soon. Like, obviously, they're talking about getting someone new in. And it's kind of like they need to figure out how they can stand alone from the quote-unquote popular side of the Bullet Club. So the Bucks and Kenny and Cody and those guys have taken Bullet Club and ran with it into like NWO DX heights, whereas Guerrillas of Destiny, the OG Bullet Club, they're kind of like, yeah, we're OGs, but like no one's really buying our merch compared to them, and it's like, where do we stand? How can they make themselves relevant again? I mean, I thought it'd be someone like Neville or something like that, but obviously that's another story. But yeah, like something's going to happen with them, and coming off that win, there is going to be something swirling with them. I don't know whether it was the right time to kind of bring something out at that show, but it's definitely in the pipeline. You can just feel it.
The whole sort of storyline behind it is great as well, because the biggest selling T-shirts you can buy as a wrestling fan is a Bullet Club shirt.
Oh yeah.
And the Bullet Club shirts are the one that outnumber anybody else, even at WWE shows. There's a larger percentage you've got a Bullet Club T-shirt.
Chucky T or Trent who said that if you have a Bullet Club T-shirt, you've never had sex. Especially if it's a Hangman shirt.
Have you got a Bullet Club T-shirt?
I have, yeah. Mine's a Snide one, though. So it's all right. I've not contributed to Pro Wrestling Tees. Mine was off Etsy.
Cody would be so upset.
But
so upset.
You say he's his biggest fan in the world and he's buying Snide merch.
That, well,
He's from Sheffield,
man. I've got a mortgage to pay for. Probably the biggest thing that came out of all of this pay-per-view was the promo right at the end with Kenny, Kenny Omega. This match had been sort of set up, the Cody versus Kenny Omega versus Ibushi for the
IWGP
at the next. So I think it's actually in the next few days. It's at the King of Pro Wrestling event.
It's coming up. Yeah,
it's very soon. Great promo work. It always is with these guys.
The
promos are so much better than they are scripted. And Kenny referenced that. You know, this is what happens when I go off script. I can't remember what I'm meant to be saying, but. Cody coming out and freewheeling almost.
Yeah.
It's quite hard to monitor if people are following the script if you don't speak very good English. Just go for it.
Yeah.
So what are they saying? I don't know.
And I think that's
sounds good though.
I kind of got referenced because he's, you know, delivering this promo and then he turns to Ibushi and translates it back because Kenny, you know, he's fluent in Japanese. He can speak Japanese. Mm. So he's saying it back to Ibushi and then he switches to the crowd and says, I'm not saying anything different. I'm just translating for him. Which I thought was brilliant. But that sets up that match, which will be great.
Pretty amazing.
I think it'll be pretty good.
Yeah, we don't, I'm excited for that.
I don't really know if you get many triple threat matches for that title in New Japan. I can't think of any recently.
Can't think of a last
but that's
one,
probably
now.
Because...
Yeah, I'm sure it'll have happened at some
It probably
point.
Has Definitely. Done, but I think from what we've seen in the last two years to 18 months,
matches.
It's been one-on-one, and it's not just been one-on-one, it's been Okada versus Omega. Mm.
They've dominated that. Time. Yeah, absolutely. Definitely. Absolutely. Yeah, it was a good card. Is there anything else we've got on there?
I think that's it for New Japan. But stepping away from New Japan and a promotion that we don't really talk much
Staying
about, and I've
Far
not
East.
Really, I've not really seen much of it. This is all pretty new to me. But the promotion Dragon Gate, was the one that Neville, originally known as Pac, now back being called Pac, chose to return at.
He was originally from Dragon Gate before he moved to NXT, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So
he wrestled all over the world, but his homestead was
Dragon Gate.
Was Dragon Gate.
I just want to say I love the Geordie Twang with the Japanese inflection.
It sounds good.
And Makari is
great.
Yeah,
it's good.
It's well good.
I'm happy that he's back. I'm happy that he's back wrestling.
Yeah.
I think he's. I don't really know what. I wonder what he's been doing. I wonder what he's been up to.
Looking at that picture.
I was going to say steroids, but might get in trouble for that again.
He's been bulking up by the looks of things because he looked.
Like
maybe it's because we've not seen him on WWE TV for such a long time because he had that series where was it he left to Enzo and then just disappeared.
Yeah,
and
really
then it was, you know, he's not left. He's just sitting on his contract. He's not turning up. He's not being a part of anything. And then it was only 3-4 weeks ago where they officially said, right, you know, after almost a year, we're releasing him from his contract. So now he's free to go and do what he wants.
Yeah.
And there's been a lot of speculation like where he's going to turn up.
Yeah. I'm glad that he went back to Dragon Gate because it's like he went back to his roots. Because I remember on Colt Cabana's podcast before he went to NXT, he was like really, really nervous. He sounded like a little, like, didn't have the typical wrestler attitude of the best and I can do
quite
that.
Quite shy.
He was, a bit shy.
I've seen him in...
And he could have had the biggest payday that he wanted anywhere in the world, probably, if he'd have asked
for it. Really could have done. When they say hottest free agent, I mean, like, genuinely was
So I'm glad that he's gone back to where he came from. I'm happy for that.
He does look quite a shy person from what... You watch sort of these, like, WWE specials.
Ride-alongs and stuff.
Things like that, or the things where they do sort of these little documentaries and they're all, you know, they have the current roster on as these sort of talking heads and he looks really shy and he sits there, you know, his hair's tied back, he's got his glasses on and he's dressed.
It's Fred Perry
his polo shirts and he looks like, you know, this nice sort of quiet lad. Such stark contrast to what he's actually like in the ring. But yeah, I'm glad he's back. I wasn't expecting him to come back to Dragon Gate, but I didn't know the history he had with it, so it makes sense. I thought he would probably turn up at maybe New Japan. I can't think of anything else. I wouldn't think he would come back to England and do anything like that.
I think he will soon.
Like that.
I reckon he'll be back soon. Probably work some like...
A Progress show maybe, but now it's too WWE-esque, isn't it?
He wouldn't go. I don't think he'd go Progress.
No. I think Progress and ICW are too tied in with WWE. For
there's a few up north that he might... There's a couple in Newcastle that he used to wrestle for.
Target Wrestling in Carlisle, England.
My God, a Target, mate.
Jesus.
Big up Target Wrestling.
Big up Target Wrestling.
But yeah, good to see him back. Good to see Neville back. It's been a while. He's genuinely one of the better performers that you will watch.
Yeah,
his in-ring work is unbelievable, and his athleticism and his sort of high flyingness is great. It'd be interesting if you see if he still does that kind of style. I'm sure it's in his locker. So.
Oh yeah, he wrestled the match at the Dragon Gate show.
Ospreay tweeted out as well about how he'd love to go with old Neville, and now he's like, we could see what we could do with new Neville. Depends how he wants to work, but He's like, Pac's always been his dream opponent, but he's referencing like original Pac pre-WWE.
Yeah.
But I mean, I wouldn't doubt Neville in any way, shape or form. Like, if Ospreay wants to go a certain way, you know, I reckon he might have to try and keep up to some degree. You know what I mean? When Pac goes, Pac goes.
So last week was Progress's biggest show they've probably ever put on, called Hello Wembley at Wembley Arena. You two went to it, hence why we didn't record a podcast last week.
Yes.
Because you guys were there. On paper, we previewed it the week before, and we were excited to watch it. It looked like an unbelievable card.
Yeah.
And by the looks of it, it lived up to it.
Yeah, I'd say so.
Yeah, it was really good. I guess it was always going to be because, you know, it's a lot of independent wrestlers that we all love to watch, and it's in the biggest stage. I guess, do you think, Rob, that was... Tom, you're Rob, you're not Tom.
That's me.
Do you think a lot of it was, like, predictable, the finishes and
ends and stuff? I think... I'm going through the matches in my head now because I've got a memory like a sieve, but... Yeah, I mean, I feel like we called most of the matches. I feel we went in with a wide scope of how the night was going to end, which kind of didn't pan out. But like everything but one component seemed to work together. Yeah. So like I'd say the majority of matches we could predict how they were going to go. But you tend to get that on big stage wrestling, because when you've had a whole year of a plucky face trying to scramble for a belt, I'd say the majority of the matches are payoff matches, and only a few of them lead into like further in the feud. So I'd say, yeah, it was fairly predictable, but I still think the matches kind of like kept you on the edge of your seat, because there was that element of like, oh yeah, it's probably going to go this way, but I mean, it could take us out that way, which, you know, I mean, what a stupid point to make, because it's a wrestling match and only one person can win. But
yeah,
I'd say there was an element of predictability there, definitely.
I mean, the first match on the card was Matt Riddle's final indie appearance against Mark Haskins, which we also, going the way it went.
He's a good boy. He goes out and he's staring at the lights. On his back.
Yeah, it was a good match, really good match. There was no reason for it not to be. They're both amazing wrestlers.
I feel like
I've maybe taken out of it a little bit because I knew Matt Riddle was leaving.
It was an emotional thing as well.
The better thing to have done personally for me would have been for him to ask NXT if he could just keep his contract on like a DL and not talk about it, go into that match against Haskins, lose,
and then
grab the mic and be like, I'm gonna go now. And
it would have felt more like a spec. I mean, going down and knowing it's going to be someone's last match. Well, we had two last matches on that card that night, and and I think like Matt Riddle's kind of quite a special one, because I mean, he was probably the biggest part of the first Progress show we went to, like him and Travis Banks, like that was a massive part.
It was great, and it was hard hitting, and it went fast, and they kept it going, and it was a brilliant opener for the show as a whole.
Yeah,
obviously, of course, Mark Haskins winning.
Good for Mark Haskins though, as well, because he's been kind of under the veil
a little bit. I mean, he's been off the tag team with Jimmy Havoc.
And Jimmy's obviously gone on to do other things, and Haskins has felt a bit...
Haskins, like, obviously was a Progress champion at a point, so he's not like he's no mug in the game.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I'd like to maybe see him now get onto a singles run.
I think it's just been this last year, hasn't it, where he's just been, you know, teaming with Jimmy Havoc.
We don't know what to do with you. It felt like they kept him and Jimmy on the sidelines, because they're like, you're good enough to wrestle in the main event, but we kind of want to free some space up and keep you in the tag division for a while. I thought it was a solid first match. It was a good opener to get the crowd it was wicked.
The Progress tag team title Thunderbastard.
That wasn't till a bit later
that
on.
Was that later on?
Like halfway through the
Yeah, like on, yeah. I mean, I'm still trying to figure out like
the next
was it the women's match?
Title,
yeah, so women's title win. Match. Okay. Yeah,
big between Millie McKenzie, Tony Storm. Didn't really like the match personally.
Not a fan.
I get why you'd like it, and I get why you wouldn't like it. Me and you said it as the match ended. They've done that finish now. Basically, Ginny like kind of used her House of Couture entourage to screw.
It's like three chicks who kind of side Ginny and come out with her and make sure she retains the title.
And they used that crux again to win the match.
I mean, they threw in the added kind of swerve of Candy Floss and was it
Laura Di Matteo?
Laura Di Matteo. They came out and you thought they were kind of on the side of Millie and Tony, and then Laura attacks Candy Floss and then turns on turned, was it Tony? Was it Millie? I think it was Tony.
Remember.
But yeah, it was very, like you say, predictable. I think that was the big thing, because you could see coming into this that Tony's obviously got the WWE stuff and she's had a couple of nagging injuries and only just lost the title after a long run. And Millie's kind of young, like really young. And is she really ready to carry that? She's really good. I mean, she's incredible, but is she ready to shoulder that progress title at this stage?
I just wish they'd give Ginny a clean win because she's good enough for it. Like,
she is good enough. I love Ginny. She's amazing.
Yeah, it kind of sucked that they use the exact same finish to that match that they used for the past God knows how many women's matches.
Yeah.
We got the debut of Jordan Grace, though.
That was cool.
Which is really cool to
see. Yeah, that was really cool. She's a beast.
She is a beast. I'll be excited to see what they do with her and like what she brings to the roster.
It's that entrance theme. It's like Pantera or something. It's like so heavy. And she's just... She's...
Good, though.
I'm looking forward to see where she goes, because having her go up against House of Couture and just throw them all off of her like ragdolls, like that would be something pretty cool to see. But that match is leading to pretty good things, but not the best, like, kind of representation of the women on that roster at the moment.
From what I've kind of read online about it, it seems to, a lot of people sort of said it's a little bit kind of, you know, WWE-ish, where there's a lot of interference, that kind of, you know, these daft sort of
shenanigans
in the ring and stuff, and that's what kind of kept her, you know, kept the title on Ginny, rather than actually pushing her as actually this great wrestler, which we know she is.
A match against Jimmy Havoc for Riptide was hellacious. Mm-hmm. He was trying to pound her through that table and she just wasn't having any of it.
Not going, were it?
Bouncing around like a ragdoll. But, God, yeah, she's really good and I wish you would give her a bit more credit.
Definitely. Atlas title match with Told Doug Williams.
That was really fun.
And Trent Seven. Great match, really great match.
I don't think I've ever watched a Trent match where I haven't had a good time. They're not epics, but they're
not that I can
fun.
Think of. Yeah, and he's a great wrestler as well. Like, people forget, like, he's great on the mic, and he does his like comedy spots and stuff like that.
So but good.
He really can hang with like the biggest and the best of them.
Yeah.
We again all saw it being Doug's last match, which again kind of sucked because you knew the outcome.
Yeah.
Well, we said that on the last podcast that we thought that would be the case, that Doug would go,
even though he's got some Australian dates to fulfill before he retires.
That's the only thing that took the shine off it. It's like, I'm retiring now. I've got a few other things to do.
Yeah.
There is that wrestling thing, though. Where
I get it, though. It's like,
if it happens internationally, it doesn't matter.
Yeah. Like, it's scheduling and stuff, innit? I get it.
Pontins are needing me. Butlins.
He's got a Butlins to run to do. It was a great match, and it was really, really not upsetting, but it was just sad to see Doug Williams.
Emotional. Seeing them both looking across the ring at each other, and Trent was just smiling at him, and it's like that passing of the torch, because, like you said in your article for Right Good Magazine, great article, by the way.
Agenda Press.
Like you said, Doug carried that British independence scene through the darkness.
I was chatting to a friend that we all have called Simon, who was at one time a wrestler.
Jack Hazard. We finally dropped him into it.
He'll hate it,
but I'm going to say it because it was a chat that we had the other day. And because he was in that around them times of Jody Fleish and Doug and people like that, because he was like in the early 2000s. And I showed him a photo, or I showed him a video of Wembley, and he couldn't believe how big the crowd was
for
the Wembley show.
If you've not,
and he said to me, he was like, "I cannot believe this is British wrestling." And I was like, "Yeah, it's big now." And he was like, "I remember the days of me in a pub or a working men's club, with five or six people watching us, like doing a match, like, and they did that all over the country." And they were saying like Kim and Doug carried like England through them dark times of wrestling.
It's true.
And got us out at this end now, which is like Wembley selling out. Well, not selling out, but 4,750 was the figure that they said.
Yeah,
4,750 for the crowd, which is huge. Mass biggest in England for an independent show. So it's very bittersweet to see Doug going, but I couldn't have thought of a better stage for him to leave on.
And he's getting on now, and it's not nice to have to keep taking them bumps into your kind of older years, I suppose. He's not super old, but it's like he's you know, it's nice to see that he's obviously in a comfortable place where he can retire and move on and focus on maybe training and, you know, just kind of enjoying life a little bit more, not having to get his head smashed in or his back smashed in. And it's good.
Yeah, well, happy
a good
for
send
you.
Off. Thanks, and all the crowd, all the team out at the end, all the Progress wrestlers up on the ramp to kind of give him a hug out. It's like, shout out to Big Doug.
Yeah.
Nice one, pal.
Nice one.
Great match. The next one was before, just before the interval, was, as Rob was saying, the Jimmy Hammock match against Paul Robinson.
God.
In a no DQ match.
And when they say that, they mean it.
They mean it. I explained the build-up on the last podcast and like kind of why they have the vitriol for each other. And I mean, did you see the... they did a press conference for Wembley before Progress.
Right.
And Paul Robinson was there answering questions from the press.
I didn't see that.
If you can find it, I won't go too much into it. Just watch it if you can find it, because it is shit hot. For like, because he's
Paul Robinson is incredible.
I didn't know he could talk like he does. Like, he was incredible.
He's vicious.
I wish I'd seen that before I'd seen the match. It had given me so much more hype going into it. But yeah, it was a brutal match, to say the least.
When that when Jimmy Havoc came out and the spotlight hit him on his entrance, and he's just painted in white from head to toe, and it's like the whole point of like the new. This was going to be bloody and this was going to be violent. Mm. And he just wanted to be this kind of like image of crimson by the end of it, because all the paint had mixed in with the blood and he had the white jeans on. Yeah. And I mean, he pretty much hit the nail on the head with it. Like, I mean, I don't know whether any nails were actually used, but I mean, it's pretty much everything else was.
Yeah.
He said that jeans, on his, like a tweet he put out with, the, you know, just before his match, you know, I'm painted white because if I bleed, I want everyone to see it.
Yeah. And it was brutal.
Savage.
It was a perfect match for them to have. I did see some people saying that they wanted it to be more gruesome, and it could have been, it definitely could have been, but I think it was right for what they
needed. As far as a large scale death match goes, though, like that more than enough did what he needed to do. Like, even the fact that they, like, even with the light tube, how he bust Jimmy, from what I could see, like, not watching the video screen, just looking over into the crowd, Jimmy's head was perfectly fine until Robinson got him with that broken light tube.
Yeah.
And it looks like he just jabbed him hard way, and there was just blood pouring down his face. You know, tacks, ladders, chairs.
Jimmy stomped Paul Robinson's head through a couple of light tubes, which was a callback to their first match.
Vicious.
Which was really nice to see the feud end. Not end that way. I think it maybe will carry on.
Maybe. Robinson was full of venom.
Robert obviously retired because of injury, but whether that was all a work or not, he just didn't want
to
do wrestling.
Way to get back into it, innit?
Just a little bit for your first match back to of that much kind of violent venom.
It was a spectacular death match. And the thing about Jimmy Havoc when he wrestles a death match is it's not this like spot, CZW, King of the Death Match, you know, the new version of it, like in the Deep South or whatever, where they just spot, put all the glass panes up, put all that stuff up. Every spot feels cleverly planned out, and it all moves with a good flow. Mm. Jimmy's really good at piecing a match together. He's got great psychology, and it just really works. And I think if you'd have toned it, if you'd have made it more gruesome, it would have become more of just like a spot for the sake of spots and those kind of gruesome things for the sake of it. Whereas everything had meaning and everything made sense.
Yeah,
I think that's the thing with Jimmy Havoc, the way he does a death match. I'm not a big fan of death matches. I think they're quite gimmicky, but
yeah.
With Jimmy Havoc, he does it in a way, like you say, that it moves and it flows with a match. Mm. It's not just, I'm going to hit you with this, and then I'm going to take this out and hit you with this. And it's not spot to spot, like you say. It's a flow, and it works, and it builds in the match, and it builds in the storyline and the match as well. So I think if they're done well, they are impressive to watch, as brutal as they are. It's when they're not done well, and it's this whole kind of almost backyard wrestling brought into the... not mainstream, but into a bigger audience.
It cheapens it. Yeah. You need to do it few, not often, and very well. And that's how they need to be used. They're important. They're like punctuation. You need to use them correctly and use them every so often. Don't just over spam it. So, yeah, really good match. One of the highlights of the night, to be honest.
Yep. And it was the interval for the show, and then...
couldn't get out for a smoke, could you?
Couldn't get out for a smoke.
Not allowed out.
Really? Not allowed out.
Yeah, once you're in.
That's it.
Once you're in, you're in. Well, it's a stadium though, isn't it? So I get it.
Yeah.
Then it was the interval, then the Thunder Bastion match for the tag titles.
I personally thought this match ran
way too long.
Way too long. About 10-15 minutes long, for my opinion.
I didn't really care for the match personally. No. Not that I didn't think it wasn't a bad match. There was a lot of good fun stuff in it.
It's probably easy to overrun with the amount of people that are involved in the match.
God, yeah.
And a normal match of that kind of style is long anyway.
Yeah.
And then you times all that by two because they've got their tag partners in there.
Yeah.
It's going to
take a long time.
I'm not too sure if they messed up a couple of things, but I know the what are the two young kids called?
Completely
forgot the names. Not is it Mills and
Mayhew. I couldn't even know who you were talking about, I'm not gonna lie.
Mills and Mayhew got eliminated while an entrance was happening or while somebody was doing something.
They just shouted they were eliminated. No one saw.
I was watching the ring and I saw him get the 1-2-3. They just got hit by the James Drake and Gibson eliminated him with like the kind of lung blower into the thing. Hit the 1-2-3. I think somebody then started their entrance. It was a countdown, to the entrance maybe. Mm. And then like small one over the mic was like Mulder Mayhew, who've now been eliminated, and all the crowd was like, What? Like,
yeah.
How did that happen? Like nobody seemed to like notice that it had gone on. So I think they maybe like messed up a little thing, a few things like that. There were a lot of spots, so like a good fun stuff, like with Santos Jr. doing the tope.
That was cool.
Like, he's a big lad to be doing
Bandido as well. Dive, he was good to
Bandido,
see.
Bandido like doing a backflip off the top rope with no fun done in his arms. Like crazy stuff.
I really enjoyed Flash and Boar in this one. So 198. They got three of the five or six eliminations. They got three of them in a row. So they had a really good outing. Really, yeah, they did. Because Flash kind of held up the little three sign because they eliminated a good number of people.
I don't remember. I don't think I was really.
No, I wasn't that involved. But once Flash and Boar got in the ring, I was kind of like, I want these guys to win.
Yeah.
As soon as they got eliminated, I was like, I'm not interested anymore.
It was a good match. It was all right. Yeah. And obviously, Aussie Open won the titles, which I'm glad about because they deserve it.
They deserve it, definitely. Definitely.
It'll be good to see them in an actual, just like an actual normal tag team environment with them titles on.
Instead of just
because we've seen them a few times now, and they're always great. They're always good matches. So it'll be good to see them like on the line defended against just one tag team.
Yeah.
But yeah, I didn't really think it was all that special. It was a bad match by any stretch of the imagination. It just wasn't everything that I kind of cared about.
Agreed.
Next up was the biggest match in Europe.
Ooh.
Ilya Dragunov versus Pete Dunne.
Peter!
Now what we know now about Pete's injury... that he supposedly has to his... Was it his foot?
It's his foot, yeah. Originally it was reported... Well, reported...
It was reported
a few days ago that it's severe and he could be out for a long time and a year.
I think that was just a promotion trying to save face and say, like, oh, the reason why he's not wrestling is because it's severe.
Mm.
And it kind of makes people go, oh, well, fair, if he's severely injured.
But then I also think the lack of any sort of social media action from Pete as well, which fed into that.
Mm.
We saw... even some sort of the sort of wrestling news outlets like WrestleTalk, Cultaholic did a little video thing about, you know, he's been severely injured, we think he's out for a long time.
Yeah.
And then it just actually, I think he's just his foot.
That's why you should maybe wait before you just say things like we do. Maybe not as long as we do, but maybe you should wait.
It was a good match.
Yeah.
They delivered definitely, and then some, I think, personally.
Yeah, it was a really, really good match. I mean,
if you advertise something as the biggest match in Europe, you've got to live up to that standard.
Yeah.
You can't just go in there half-arsing it. And they never do anyway, because I've never seen a bad match from Pete Dunne. But, yeah, both guys gave it everything.
The crowd again,
I said, knowing what I know now, I think maybe I can tell that he might have been a little bit hurt in that match.
The crowd was a surprising split, though. The amount of Ilya Dragunov fans. And, I mean, like, you could say, he's going to have a lot of fans, but a massive section of the female fans, though. I noticed there was a lot of girls chanting for Ilya. Like, they were just, rabid for Ilya to win.
For me, personally, I think it's just because I'm a bit of a patriot. But I can't go into a match... with an English man versus a Russian man.
Yeah.
And cheer for a Russian man.
It was Rocky IV.
It literally
was
Rocky IV.
It was Rocky IV.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, I was saying, the way
that's
they should...
That's the thing, though. Yeah. How many times have we seen that in, like, late 90s, early 2000s
that's
WWE?
That's Rocky IV.
Where that's what that is. And that is that home talent.
I can't believe I didn't say it to you. I was saying to
against
him,
that, you know, European or Eastern European or in the old days
classic,
of, like, Hogan and Iron Sheik or whatever. That's what that's all built on. And that's just old school wrestling.
They should have had... Before Ilya got to Pete, they should have had Ilya Trent Seven and him injure Trent. Like, Trent comes out dressed as Apollo Creed, you know, like dressed up in the old red, white, and blue, doing a little dance, and then Ilya just messes him up completely.
Yeah, they had the violin cover for a Volta's entrance. They should have had a James Brown personator for a Living in America.
Wow!
I did not that even click in the end. It was literally Rocky IV.
But I thought the heat for Jacoby was like. When everyone was chanting, you're just a shit Paul Heyman at him.
Yeah.
I feel that took away from, like, the... Because they chanted it, like, right
in
at
the
start.
Yeah.
And I was just kind of getting settled in for the intensity and the electricity.
Yeah.
But then you start getting, like, you're just a shit Paul Heyman. You're like, mate, these guys haven't even touched yet. Like, please just wait.
But it was a great match. Really good match. I think they'll probably do it again soon.
Be nice to see.
They shook hands at the end and stuff, which I didn't like personally. I'd like to see them keep themselves apart and then maybe again lead it on to some more matches.
Ilya should have just jumped out the ring and assaulted all of Yeah. All of Peter's boys.
Yeah.
True nice. Russian something, Russian just standard.
Something. Yeah. But yeah. Again, no complaints about it. Definitely a typical Pete Dunne match.
Pete Dunne's never, like, I've never seen him have a bad match. But to be honest, I've never seen him have a match that would be, and I don't like the star rating, but I've never seen him anything that would be below 4.5 stars. They're always really, really great matches. Mm. He's just so good. Good. So, yeah, that was excellent. One of the highlights of the night as well.
Yep. Then you had the next match was the TLC.
Eddie Dennis versus...
Between Dennis and Mandrews.
Mark
Andrews. I've seen the promo video for this, of the sort of build-up.
The Wild West one.
It was great.
Yeah, the Wild West one.
It was really good.
I don't know who makes the program. Like, they played, for the big matches, they played a video package before pretty much every one of them. And
they were all good.
It was good because, like, if you had never been to it, if that was your first show, for example, you could understand what was happening in the ring.
By the sounds of it, when they showed it on the Jim big gave before, the... Is this your first show? It was a massive roar, thousands of people was shouting. So it's like good, it's a good mix.
We don't want the same people going to the same shows all the time.
The ultras,
I mean, it's great that they've got that following and that. I mean, there's a lot. When I went to my first one last year with you guys, and he said that, I'm like, I'm not standing up.
I remember for weeks leading up to my first show, I was like, well, what do I say? what do I say? I was genuinely panicking because you were like, you're gonna have to tell him. He does it with everyone, and I'm like,
I was trying to wind you up.
I don't know. And then he never even asked, and I was like, cool. It'd have been pretty funny.
Eddie Dennis and Mandrews.
That table, mate. God. That table was the star of the show.
Not just a table, the
several, right? They must have tried to go through a table about 4 or 5 times.
Probably.
Like, but the tables they were using, you could see from the crowd, they were massive dowels running down the sides of them, so they were reinforced.
You were reinforced.
And every time they'd hit that table, like, hard, fast, the table would just bounce, and it looked agonising.
It did look.
At one point, one of the table legs went through the ring apron.
Through the actual planks of the ring,
and it was just jammed in the apron.
Like, it did, like, a Canadian destroyer off the top rope, like, try and put him through the table, and it just, like, they bounced off it, and the leg of the table just split through the canvas and went into the ring.
Mark Andrews must have climbed I've got to be a 20-foot ladder, and he did, like a senton, like a swanton off the top of it.
Didn't break.
Just smashed right into it.
I quite like that, though. Obviously, it wasn't intended to happen, but if the idea is that you're putting someone through a table and you just can't do it, so you just keep going and you keep going and you keep going.
Yeah, that pop when they finally did it.
That's the thing. So, like, when it ended with Eddie Dennis, like, pile-driving him through a table off the ladder, which was brilliant, but it got such a huge pop because the table had finally broke. I feel like it took away from the match a little bit.
It needed a pinfall.
People weren't... No, it was a TLC match, wasn't it?
No, this is what I'm saying. Because it was a TLC... Because a TLC, traditionally, you don't have a belt to
grab. I don't think it was. I thought it was just a TLC.
It was like a ladder match.
But then it involved, like, a contract for a title shot at the after the last minute. It didn't seem to be announced.
If Eddie Dennis had hit that pile driver, smashed that table, then crawled over him for a 1-2-3...
Yeah, it'd have been great.
That would have been better. But he had to hit it, then spend a lot of time getting up, then climb the ladder. And another thing, he was at the top of the ladder. Mark Andrews was laying on the canvas after he just pushed him off into a table, laying there. Eddie was like within finger distance of that contract. Then he looked down, saw Mark Andrews, climbed down the ladder, and then started to beat him up some more. Yeah. Like, I want to really punish you. Psychology-wise, you just grab that thing and then just beat the shit out of him.
Yeah, of course you would.
It just did not make any sense.
And I say, it was a great match. I just feel like the audience and me, I was guilty of it as well. I couldn't wait for the next table spot to see if they'd go through it or not. And then when they finally did, I was like, the table broke, but I wasn't really caring about the match all that much at that point. But that being said, I'm glad that it was a good end to their feud. It made sense. Perfect end to, like, a year-long feud.
Eddie needed to win that. I mean, Mark Andrews is already fairly established.
Absolutely.
I think it made
sense.
Solid
match. Definitely a solid match.
And now... your main event of the evening.
Main event of the evening.
Yeah.
So, Volta... take on Tyler Bate for the Progress World Championship.
It was my favourite match of the night.
Yeah,
I'd say.
Me too. Absolutely.
So good. So good. Even just starting that promo package, that you've seen the promo package, haven't you, Rob?
Yeah.
Just the whole concept of, like, you know, Tyler's been around a little while, but he's started to get into a bit of this thing where he's, you know, dressing up in goofy outfits and being a bit of a playboy and kind of looking to maybe not take it very seriously. So Walter, who is the epitome of, I am a serious wrestler, is kind of critical of Tyler, saying, you know, you're just a cheap Conor McGregor, like, you're just playing games, you're a little boy and I'm a big man. And it's like, it just it just builds. It's such a good story because Tyler, like, you know, he's the inaugural WWE UK champion, which, I mean, you could be forgiven for forgetting that because Pete's had such an iconic run with it.
Yeah, for the amount of time that Pete's had it, you do forget that Tyler was the first one.
Yeah.
And he looks so different.
Oh, it's a different
compared to, you know, now. I mean, and it's only two years or so, but the change in his appearance, and he's physically stronger.
One of the like best looking wrestlers in the world. I mean, even with his height, he looks good because he's just so stocky.
He's a bit of a, almost a bit of like when Eddie Guerrero put the weight on and got big, and you know, he's not a tall guy, but he's
a bit of a Benoit. He can not that you want to be a
body guy.
He's a body guy now.
He's a big guy.
But yeah,
great match.
And I mean, we were just looking at the Walter entrance before we started talking, weren't we? Like, you got a clip of it, didn't you? Yes. Like, mate, I'm getting goosebumps even thinking about it. It was just so good.
They Progress did a brilliant thing where they got two, what's the word for somebody who plays a violin?
Violinist.
Brilliant.
That's fiddler.
Two young fiddlers.
Two young female fiddlers on the stage playing the Symphony Number 9, whatever it is.
What it comes out to.
Like, so they played the intro, like, in pure darkness, spotlights on them playing that intro, and it gave me, like, a, like you just said, huge goosebumps all up and
down. I'm getting it. It's just mad. Think,
like, it's such a perfect build to that that match. And all the lights went off, and then his actual entrance played, and he came out.
And then you got the square up in the ring, the sheer size difference between the two of them.
Crazy.
And easily foot and a half smaller.
Easily. And the fact that Tyler chose to wear yellow, like giving a bit of a Hulk Hogan vibe. So he had that Hogan Andre WrestleMania 3 kind of thing.
It was great.
There's a picture that that Y2 Jim Bob guy on Instagram took. He's like the photographer who does all, like, a lot of the indie stuff, did all in as well. And it's just the entire arena with them two standing, looking at each other in the middle of the ring. I'm like, I want that on my wall. Yeah. That is amazing. Great picture. Such a good visual.
Definitely.
But
It was it was everything that I expected it to be, like a lot of back and forth, which was good. But then again, like, after a little bit, Walter started to take over and kind of beat down Tyler and had to keep fighting back, which again makes perfect sense for the size difference and, like, who they are as wrestlers.
And it kind of made sense in the story as well, because as it drew in near the end, Tyler had hit loads on him, you know, he'd done the pressing, he'd, like, picked him up on his shoulders, and he literally had shown his strength, but he started to kind of lose composure, and he was kicking Walter in the head, calling him all sorts of names and getting all, like, kind of cocky and arrogant, a bit of that kind of McGregor kind of thing.
Yeah,
so it's perhaps that loss of composure that could have cost him the match in the end.
He made a lot of sense. Tyler Driver, which I thought was going to win the match. Like,
yeah,
he hit that.
We'd said that to each
other.
He got him up
for the Tyler Driver.
Hit that on such a big person.
Yeah,
God,
I don't know. He did very well to get him up. Like, Volta gave a lot of effort for it as well. Like, they both did it perfectly. And I thought when he, like, landed, I was, this is it. Like, this
Tyler's
is the pin. This is the
one,
three.
Yeah.
He's going to do it. And he kicked out like 2.9. Yeah, good match. Volta retained.
The only maybe controversy is that the show ran over by around about an hour.
An hour and a bit.
That long, really?
It was a 5.5 hour show.
I thought because I saw reports, it's overrun, and Progress had said, sorry, and people had to leave, so we'll put the main event online when we can, and we'll give it you for free. But I didn't know it was that long.
Yeah,
I thought it was like 10 minutes or so.
No.
I think it was a 5 hour show.
They advertised the event. It said on the website, this event will end no later than 8:30. At 8:25, Tyler Bate made his entrance.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, it overran by a long way.
And even at that point, you think this is going to be a squash match or it's going long.
Yeah.
I mean, we said it might be a squash.
Yeah.
But
I wouldn't have minded a squash, to be fair.
It would be quite cool.
Very cool. Yeah, I was saying to Tom, like, I think that's one of the reasons why I wasn't so much invested in the Thunderbastard match, because I was just really, like, burned out at that point. I'd seen four big matches, and then there was still another four to go, and they weren't going short, they were going long, which again, I get, because it's the biggest stage they've ever had, like, they're going to have long matches. But yeah, when the Thunderbastard was still going after, like, was it like a 30-minute match, do you think, maybe?
Something like that,
Still going and still going and still going, and it just needed to end at some point. And I think that's, I think it burnt me out a little bit because of how long it ran. But when the main event started, when the violins kicked in, I was back into it and I was like, this is wicked, let's go.
I would love Progress to give a kind of breakdown of where they overran. Like, I'm interested to know that, because to me, the Thunderbastard, but there must have been more than that, because the Thunderbastards couldn't have added up to make that much of a run over. So it's like, whereabouts, I mean, maybe setting up the tables and stuff, because like that promo package for Dennis and Mandrews is really long, but because they're setting up all them tables and ladders.
They'd have accounted for that, though, I would think.
Yeah, you'd have thought so.
I don't know. I'm not too sure where they lost the time.
Again, for us, it wasn't that bad because we were driving.
I didn't care.
So, like,
we got more graps,
really,
didn't we?
Didn't really mind
got
more to graps. Us. But there's a lot of people.
I think
that
the thing is,
that
if every match is
like
5 minutes over,
adds
it doesn't
up,
take
it?
Long.
No,
it's right
up.
If every interval is 10-15 minutes longer than it is, we've been to progress shows where they say, right, we'll see you in half an hour. We're gonna have an interval. It's not half an hour. It's 45 minutes. Sometimes even longer.
It always goes long.
It always goes long.
And it's not like All In, where they had the main event, and because it was a 6-man tag, they could go, let's just do it quick, spot, let's make it look good, and then let's get off air as quick as we can. When you've only got two guys in the ring, like, it's kind of like, we need to at least build a story, otherwise this match will just get lost. And because it's so vital to Progress's overall story, they needed to make sure that this Wembley, which, I mean, Jim said, this could be the biggest show we ever do.
Yeah.
And I mean, I think they'll maybe outdo it, but he said it could be. Mm. They want to make sure that scene of Tyler and Walter, that WrestleMania 3, that Progress's big main event, was everything it needed to be.
Yeah.
And I'm glad that they decided, let's just run with it instead of let's just call it a day quick.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I don't know why they just don't start earlier.
Mate, I'm glad they didn't, because we wouldn't have seen half the matches.
We wouldn't have seen half the matches if we did.
Maybe. But that, you know, that keeps the title on Walter. It keeps him looking like this animal, this, you know, this huge guy that's just, you don't know who's going
to
drop it to.
It made sense for Tyler to lose now, thinking back. I was happy. I would have liked to have seen Tyler win, because I'd like to see him as a champion. But when you think back to the people that Walter has beat and beat, like, badly, it would have never made sense for Tyler to
win. The only person you could think of beating him would be Pete, but Pete's clearly made it known that he's not bothered about the Progress title. He's like, I don't care about it.
He held both for a long time, and it was great when he did, but he doesn't need to do that anymore.
It's like, it's too much to put in my suitcase, mate. My jaw's hurting.
Yeah, I can't hold these two.
So the next title match for Walter, I think, is Zack Sabre Jr. at the next Progress
show in
Camden.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, you can catch Hello Wembley on Demand Progress. They've just put that up on there.
It's
to watch.
Finally!
Pivotshare.com or something like that.
If you just Google Demand Typhoon Progress, you'll find it and you'll be able to catch it. In the meantime, you can catch us on The Lights Pod on Twitter and Staring at the Lights on Instagram. And we do write stuff for RGM.press as well, which you can catch on there.
Absolutely.
We'll see you next time.